From the hallowed halls of Flood Law, via the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Flood Law. Flood Law, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
We're back. So, summer coming to a close, but obviously the news is continuing to beat into the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan. A lot going on. I mean, we have Congress people or representatives that are under a microscope. I don't know if that's just something that comes to a slow close as they stand for whatever it is that they're standing for. But hopefully the House and the representatives can get to a business at hand. So, you know, that's one story going on. Then we have, obviously, something I've talked about for a long time on this show, and here it is. It's in the front page, right of the page, you know, both the Free Press and the news, and we're going to have the writer on, a great writer for the Detroit Free Press that deals with higher education. David's going to come on and talk to us this evening. About how Michigan State University is under a microscope themselves and the claim of how they mishandled or potentially mishandled those investigations that I talked about with Title IX. Title IX being the sexual assaults and the investigations that take place on campus. That is a quagmire, and that is one where, you know, they have to walk a razor's edge at the universities and the students that are in there, that it's not easy at times, because inebriation, drinking, obviously, is a serious problem, and you're going to hear from the best that students nowadays stand the chance of being expelled and prosecuted a lot easier than they once did. And then we have, obviously, this case I want to talk about, and I'm going to give a tease for next month, but this case that happened out in Ypsilanti, the student that was murdered in 2012, I'm just going to tell you now, there's more to that story. And that story that you see in the front page of the paper, this Mr. Turnquist, represented by one of the best attorneys in the state of Michigan, Paul Stablin, who has that as a client, had that case dismissed. I got to tell you something. There's going to be some turns and twists in that case, no question in my mind, and watch how that unfolds. And I don't think that there is all to the story about just that particular homicide. So we'll talk about it. I'll give you a little bit of a snippet about what's going on there. And you know, we have a guest that's coming back to us who is one of my heroes, great prosecutor, assistant prosecutor in Wayne County, someone that spearheads some of the most difficult cases there are in Wayne County, and the sex offense and the rape unit, really, for just layman's terms. Suzette Samuels. Suzette, you with me? I think she's here. Suzette?
Yes, I'm here, Todd.
Hey, how are you?
Well, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for coming on. Always much appreciated. And how's the saga? How's the daily grind in the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office prosecuting the ones that are charged with the let's just call it rape, criminal sexual conduct?
Right.
How's that going? How's the unit doing? Your unit, and are you guys getting convictions?
Yeah, our unit is stronger than ever, and we also have a special sideline project and, another unit going on simultaneously with our normal sexual assault prosecutions, and that is the investigation, the testing of backlog rape kits, the investigation of those cases, and we'll soon be facing the prosecution of those cases coming up. Well, we're already started, but that's a monumental task that we have in front of us, and the testing has been done, and now it's time to continue the investigation and get on with the prosecutions of that case. So we're extremely busy in Wayne County. I believe we've set new standards for the prosecution, the investigation and prosecution of sexual assault that I think our model will be used around the country.
That's awesome. So just as a backdrop, so all the listeners know, and we are picking up more and more listeners all the time. So the backdrop of that is back in, I think it was 2010 or so, Rob Spada, Kim Worthy, and the like found these rape kits that were not tested back in the crime lab. It was ultimately shut down. And these are the DNA, the sex assault crime units are
right.
Basically the test.
Right, and back in 2009.
Was it 2009?
Yeah, I believe it was 2009, and the kits were in property storage.
I can't imagine,
right.
Thinking about this just for, and we've talked about it before, but just for a microsecond here, someone having to go through those insanely invasive tests and sitting on a shelf and no one doing anything about it. Now all of a sudden, you all at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, the state level, your level, have spent, and the Detroit Crime Commission, I know they donated money, Dr. Cotton and the Crime Commission, Andy Arena and the like, have put basically all those tests through a forensic scientist and have come up with DNA matches to people that may even be serial rapists. Is that right?
Oh, that's true. That's true. I think we have a lot of case-to-case connections. These are victims who don't know one another, but the DNA and their sexual assault kits matches the DNA profile of perpetrators and other sexual assault kits. So,
how far back will this be able to go? I mean, anecdotally speaking, Suzette, I mean, you have prosecuted, I venture to say we can't put a number on how many cases you've prosecuted or looked at. How far back will this, go? And
that's an excellent question. I mean, the testing itself will go back, has gone back, the kits, a little over 20 years.
Wow.
Whether we can prosecute all of those cases now comes down to the individual case, whether or not we can find witnesses, whether or not statute of limitations has run on some of these cases. And that's not an easy question to answer. That has to go on a case-by-case basis, and oftentimes turns on the individual facts of the case, whether or not the statute of limitations has run. In May of 2001, in the state of Michigan, the statute of limitations on criminal sexual conduct in the first degree changed, and there is no statute of limitations.
Right.
As of May of 2001. However, if the statute of limitations had already run before the new law came into effect, then those cases they're gone.
Yeah.
But even if they were a day short of the statute of limitations having run in May of 2001, and there's criminal sexual conduct in the first degree, we're
going to touch that. We're going to get back to that, Suzette. I love having you on. Your wealth of knowledge. Stay with me. We'll be right back after this. If you have questions, 1-800-859-0WJR. We have Amanda and Rachel on the phones for us tonight, taking over Champagne's role. We'll talk about that when we get back.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum. where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We're back with Suzette Samuels. We also, we're also going to bring in a Free Press writer shortly who has written a great article on this Michigan State University mishandling on-campus sex assault cases in this Title IX saga, and something that I've talked about for a long time. It's an issue that is, I think, very dicey, and something that needs to be, quite frankly, needs to be properly handled, because there are plenty of victims that don't get a voice, and there are plenty of targets that, unfortunately, get, prosecuted in those situations that there's not a due process standard that anyone would ever really tolerate. David Jesse is gonna join us shortly. Suzette, so we were talking about, and thank you so much for being here. Suzette Samuels is an assistant prosecuting attorney. She is someone that is in charge of the sex assault unit for Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, probably or perhaps one of the biggest units in the, I shouldn't say biggest units, but handles the most amount of cases in the country, one that certainly sees every possible scenario that comes by, or fathomable, if that's a word right now. Don't let my illness, I got a sinus infection, and it's not holding Flood Law back today. So anyway, she's one that has prosecuted countless cases, and one that has done so successfully. We were talking about the rape kits. Suzette, you've been working on this and prosecuting these cases even before we had the testing done. Isn't that right? You with me, Suzette? Did I lose Suzette? Oh, maybe I did. I don't know. Well, I don't know. We'll get back to Suzette here. I think I have David with me. David, you there?
I am here, Todd.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm well. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll get Suzette. Maybe you have some questions for her. I see that you talked about the case up in East Lansing where there were some athletes that you had basically talked about in the article, and the prosecutor up there in Ingham County did not prosecute, refused to issue the warrants. So tell me about this story. How did you get on it, and what piqued your interest?
Well, so this whole topic of sexual assault on college campus has really, you know, been the focus nationally for quite some time now. I spent about a year looking at this, talking to survivors, talking to folks who have been accused of these attacks, looking at some of the legal issues around them, and really, and we published that over the summer here, a month or so ago. And what we found is there's really a broken system here, that nobody's happy with how rapes and other sexual assaults on campuses are handled.
I got to agree with that. Just having to have my fair share of cases that I have had to go across the country to deal with, but this system is not a good system the way they have it set up, just my personal opinion.
And they're right. And part of the problem is there's no clear guidelines for what a university should do or how it should handle. For example, about half the universities in the state, if a student reports to a RA, a faculty member, another staff member that they have been raped, about half of them will pick up the phone and call the police right away and bring the criminal justice system in. The other half or so won't. They will only call the police if the survivor explicitly asks them to. So you can see there's a difference in styles. What's the investigation process like? Who's in control of that?
Right. Why is this system all of a sudden in place? For example, I mean, Title IX It's my understanding, maybe I'm wrong, but from the research, and maybe you've gleaned or found something out about this or ferreted out this issue, but why all of a sudden in the past few years did this take place? Was this because schools received funding, and because of that funding, it was either you have to investigate these things or you don't?
Some of it was funding, and quite honestly, a lot of it was, there are a number of survivors who very courageously stepped forward and put faces to this problem.
Sure.
And said, hey, look, we need a better system. I mean, there was the case, I believe it was in Columbia University, where the person who was the survivor, a young woman, carried around a mattress around campus to bring attention to
right,
her
right.
case.
You remember you that? Know? Sure. So, I remember that case.
So this heightened kind of attention to it, the survivors who are willing to talk and tell their stories, put a lot more focus on it. And so the university said, well, we got to do something. We're getting all this political pressure. We got to try something. The problem is, you know, they didn't necessarily have the staff, they didn't have the processes in place, they didn't have the policies in place. And that's what you saw at MSU, and that's what the federal government, the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education, you saw them come back yesterday and say, your policies and your procedures are flawed. You're not handling this stuff right. You don't have the systems in place to handle these things. They said, you know, you're not documenting. We tried to go back through files, and we didn't. In the files, they were incomplete. We can't tell if you handled the case right or wrongly,
right?
Because it's just not there. So there's some capacity building that needs to be built at the universities. And the universities are in a tough place. You know, they're not generally, you know, they're not judges. They're not trained police investigators.
Exactly,
you know.
Exactly, David. That's my problem with this whole thing. And Suzette, I'm going to get her in on this in a moment, but. This is the problem I have. Johnny goes to a school. Johnny goes to some school, let's say, and we'll pick a state, Illinois. Johnny goes to school in Illinois, and all of a sudden there's an accusation of criminal sexual misconduct. Now, two things happen. Johnny's fourth year, $250,000 at this school invested. There's an accusation, and now all of a sudden, there's only two defenses. Suzette will talk about this as well. There's only two defenses to criminal sexual conduct. You either didn't do it, wrong guy, or yes, I did, but it was consensual. So here, the due process, Johnny goes in front of the school board. You know who the judge is? The judge is the school. You know who the prosecutor is? The prosecutor is the school. So you have a prosecutor and a judge, one and the same. How do you lose? You can't lose. And then they only have to prove by a preponderance that the act actually happened. So I find it to be so troubling. How many, there's real victims. There's real victims that this, you know, this happens to. And then what does it do to the people? Like, you know, I've seen a few athletes, unfortunately, get targeted. And how does that work? Is it... Do you mind if I bring Suzette into this?
No, that's fine.
Suzette, are you there with me?
I'm here, Todd.
Well, David, I put that out. Tell me what your thoughts are and what you unfolded.
Well, I was going to say, part of the problem right around this whole issue of the universities handling it, so you have the problem you just said, and there are lawsuits that we wrote about. There's a lawsuit against the University of Cowan for someone who was kicked out for rape, alleging that his due process rights were violated. On the other hand, you also have a number, and I talked to a number of survivors who the university found that they were raped or sexually assaulted, and the punishment was, you know, write a paper.
Send an apology letter. Right. And then they don't get prosecuted at all, perhaps.
They don't get prosecuted.
Right. Suzette, have you ran into this at all? I mean, I don't know if you read the article, and I apologize unfairly so of bringing you into this, but you, you're, I respect you're one of the best. Have you ran into these issues on university campuses or people consulted with you?
We get some of that. We do get some of that. One of the problems is that you just pointed out, a lot of it doesn't make it to the outside world beyond the campus. I mean, you have the judge and the jury and the investigators, everything right there on campus, and I don't think that's a good situation.
Plus, like, for example, Suzette, one of the best investigators at Michigan State University, a doctor that helped on the rape kit cases and talked about rape victims, a lot of these investigators at the universities, the professors or the student that is on the jury, if you will, one of the three panelists that it happens, they're not trained in investigating criminal sexual misconduct. They have no clue.
That's so true.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the first thing that has to be done. First of all, I think the students have to know where they can report it. I mean, I don't think they know where they can go to report it.
That's what Dave was saying. Sure.
Then once something is reported, there has to be an independent, objective body to investigate these cases.
Trained in investigations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And whether that happens on a campus or outside of the campus, that investigation
has to
meet certain protocol and integrity. And it seems to me that's kind of what may be lacking here. I mean, there's inconsistency, confusion.
Right, right. David, you wrote a great piece, and I urge everybody to read it. If you can hang on for a minute,
sure.
we'd love to talk with both you and Suzette a moment more on this. And right after this break, we'll come back with Behind the Bench and Flood Law.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We have two great guests with us tonight. We have Suzette Samuels, an assistant Wayne County prosecutor. He's been there and tried hundreds of cases, everything from homicides to rape cases. We also have a great writer for the Detroit Free Press who covers the higher education for the Free Press, David Jesse. We were talking about the sexual assault cases that happen on campuses. I do want to get into that. I do want to also let you all know that next month we are going to delve deeply into this homicide case that's happened out in Ypsilanti that's unsolved from 2012. A tragic, ugly case that's caught the front page of the paper on many of occasions. And today, there is this suspect, allegedly the number one target, Mr. Turnquist, that the FBI has basically pointed the finger at. Well, I'm going to have a special guest, a gentleman that to me is one of the best trial lawyers. It was one of the best trial lawyers around. He's not trying cases anymore. Tony Chambers, Anthony Chambers, a dear friend, great man, someone that is going to shed some light on that case. We're working together on that piece, and I promise you that there is going to be more to that whole situation that meets the eye. So stay tuned. That's going to be an interesting night. We'll have some investigators, we'll have some lawyers, and we'll be talking about that at length. Now, in the meantime, we have tonight two special guests, and this is what I think everyone should know about. It's right now. It's this time of year, and Rachel, obviously, you're a Michigan State person, aren't you, Rachel? No. No, yeah. So anyway, this is parents. You got to know something. When you go and send your kids to school, there will be an orientation, and when the orientation takes place, they will go through the student book of conduct. And when they go through that student book of conduct, there will be a small little benign paragraph to 95% of the students that are listening out there. There will be this benign paragraph that talks about sexual misconduct. And what it's going to say is this. First and foremost, right, it'll talk about what to do when an assault takes place. And then it's going to talk about this. It's going to talk about consent. Adults, two 18-year-olds, what happens? They drink. If they do drink, and that happens, God forbid, right? But if they do, someone that has imbibed in alcohol, had a few beers, cannot, according to the conduct, code of conduct on most campuses, cannot consent. Therefore, regardless of whether or not there would be a criminal prosecution, if there is non-consensual, and it didn't meet the threshold of a criminal law, it could meet the threshold of expelling you from that university. If you're expelled from that university, good luck in trying to get into another university. So, I don't know if David, did you by chance read MSU's policy and student code of conduct when you put this piece together?
Not this particular one, but when we did our previous look this summer, I did, yes.
So, you know, Suzette, obviously consent is a defense in a criminal courtroom. And if someone is totally out of it, that's not consent.
Correct.
We have those cases. You've had those cases.
But, all the time.
Yeah. In universities, though, this is the problem. First of all, we don't teach our kids necessarily. I don't necessarily know, David, tell me, when you did this piece, you know, how seriously was the focus in on educating the kids of what they can and can't do?
Well, I think it's interesting, the Federal Office of Civil Rights, the Education Department's Office of Civil Rights, when they met with, after they received a complaint, they came to Michigan State's campus and met with a great number of students, and they found in those groups, the report said, that a large number of them had no idea of who to report it to, what the guidelines were, what the process was gonna happen if you reported one. They had no idea, and you know, we found that as well when we were talking to survivors. I remember talking to a mom of a University of Michigan student who was raped, and you know, she said they went to the hospital and they're getting a rape kit done, and as they're doing that, the university comes in and they're trying to tell her about the process, and the mom said, you know, I was so confused, I don't even know what I agreed to at that time. You know, we just yeah, okay, whatever, you know. And they didn't, and then later on some of that stuff came back to hurt their efforts to see justice. But you know, so it's a very confusing issue. The universities don't necessarily do a good job of spelling out very clearly what's going to happen, and you know, like you said, most 18-year-olds are sitting through orientation, which is happening this week on many of these college campuses. You know, they're just, okay, I got to get through this. Got another, you know, just let me through this so I can get out and party. I can meet new friends. It's the last thing on their mind.
Right, right. So this is going to be my stab in the dark and my thought about what this is all about. All universities need federal funding. Even the private ones get federal funding for grants. And because of the fact that if you want to receive those federal funds, Title IX and the office that handles these investigations said that unless you have protocol in place and do certain investigations, we're not going to have that funding, which then in turn, it goes directly against that for which the criminal prosecution and properly trained law enforcement, the police officers and law enforcement agencies have been trained to do. So, and from a criminal defense standpoint, in the school system, they make it mandated that the defendant talk, otherwise he's expelled. So it's just, to me, it's just this huge quagmire of problems, and I think, unfortunately, so the best schools that have been marked on this, I guess, for that we've seen and studied across, have been at Virginia, Tennessee. Believe it or not, University of Michigan. We've had a few cases there, and they did them insanely well, but they had law enforcement involved at the same time, and it's just one of those quagmires. But David, you did a great piece. What do you take away from all of it?
Well, I think I take away from this what I took away this summer from the longer series of stories we did. You know, there needs to be some sort of uniform standard of response. If we're going to make these universities respond, we need to very clearly set up a system that's well known, that offers training, that can tell folks how to go about this. And it needs to, you know, be done by third parties. I think both sides, both survivors and those who are accused, would say that it needs to be done by someone who's not tied. I mean, think about a university. Why, you know, they don't want to make anything, you know, they try to quash these things, try to sweep it under the under the rug. Then they cite, you know, student privacy laws and won't give details to people like me because they don't want to see it playing out in the press. And that's part of why, you know, they don't take it to the criminal justice system. When the criminal justice system prosecutes someone, well, then they're in open court, right? And then you get newspaper headlines and TV cameras and people learn about it, and that can hurt your reputation as a school. When you just do it internally through administrative actions, you know, I can't write in the Free Press the next morning, you know, what happened. I can't write about it, you know, being a problem on your campus. So it comes down to, it's just a broken system, I think is the best way to put it.
Right.
Well, I got to tell you, I think the system is broken. I like the idea of turning it over to a third party, but more importantly, I think I just like good old-fashioned law enforcement work and letting the prosecutors and the police do their gig and do their job and don't obstruct that. The schools take it very seriously, as they must, and there's great if there's a great hotline or helpline or help desk, that's all beautiful and wonderful, but let the pros do what they do. And I think until, you know, because there's a lot of students out there that don't have a lot of wisdom, make, you know, if you look at some of these accusations, some of them, it's takes away from the real victims. So anyway, David, thank you so much for being with us. Suzette, uh-huh. I got a few more questions for you. If you can stay with me, I just want to talk to you a little bit more about this new unit that's going after the testing, the prosecutions of the results of the rape kit. Can you stay with me for a couple more minutes?
Sure, Todd.
Thank you. David, thank you very much.
Thanks,
we'll
Todd.
Be right back right after this with Behind the Bench and Flood Law.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. Coming to a close of another show with Behind the Bench. You know, this was a sad week. We lost a trooper in a tragic accident, Michigan State Police Trooper Chad Wolf. Our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to him, his family, and to all the troopers that and all law enforcement that guard our streets and protect us and make us safe. That's a tragic loss. And then we had another tragic loss of one of our Detroit police officers who one of our special units that had passed away as well in the past month. And obviously anytime we lose law enforcement early, It touches us all. So anyway, one of the great law enforcement officers out there, someone that spearheads and keeps us safe and keeps the world a better place, Suzette Samuels. Suzette, thank you so much for being with us. Talk to me just a little bit. We were talking about the rape kits.
Right.
Just out of curiosity, you know, we know Wayne County is going through turmoil with regards to the budget and having to correct the ship, if you will, and right the ship as far as finances go. Is it taking a strain or a toll? Do you see that, or are you just putting your head down, going to work every day, and making great things happen regardless?
Well, I think that's probably what most of us are doing. It's a very difficult time. Somehow Prosecutor Worthy has rallied the troops and is still getting the job done and the resources necessary for us to get this project done, but it's not an easy task, to say the least. But we're doing it. We have a lot of dedicated people, and these are people who could easily go out into the private practice world and probably make more money, but they're really dedicated. But there's no better training ground.
Well, I know that, Suzette.
Yeah, you know that firsthand. So, yeah, we're putting our head down, and we're getting it done. It's an amazing opportunity to be able to say that, you know, we've tested everything that we know that's out there, untested sexual assault kits, and that we're going to try to do everything possible to see that there's justice for every one of those individuals. And it really is. They are people. They represent people.
Have you contacted any victims that, you just caught them off guard and said, we have found so-and-so, we have found the person that we believe committed this assault? I mean, tell us, I mean, I can't imagine, 4 years later, all of a sudden, right, out of the blue, here, you know, Suzette, you call somebody. How does that go down?
Todd, you've touched on one of the biggest issues in these cases, and there's been a lot of debate and a lot of attention paid to this issue of victim notification. That's a big area in and of itself. And how do you go about this? We've become experts at it. We've studied the issue for many years, and there's a certain protocol that needs to be followed when you're contacting people years later after an assault to let them know that you found the person who assaulted them.
Wow. Oftentimes
in sexual assault cases, the victim, some call them survivors. I let the victim tell me when she's ready to be called a survivor, but that's another thing that I've learned. But oftentimes they don't tell. They've reported it to law enforcement, but they haven't told their husband. They haven't told their children. The husband and children may not even have existed at the time that the assault occurred. So you have to be really careful. You have to be very private. And when we make initial contact with them, even in person, we are very sensitive as to who's around them. We usually don't have a discussion with them as soon as they're contacted. Initial contact is made, and we let them call back oftentimes, and we take it from there. It's a step-by-step process just for the notification. And by the way, that happens a lot in the regular course of business, even outside of the sexual assault kit project. There are other jurisdictions all around the county who have sexual assault kits where the results don't come in for a year, 2 years. That happens.
Oh, right. No, my office still does local prosecutions, and we work with law enforcement all the time and trying to get these rape kits tested and get them through the system. It's unfortunately the backlog and the manpower throughout the state.
Pretty
and that's why
sure.
we're using outside sources out throughout the country. Tennessee,
pretty sure that we've got all of the Wayne County law enforcement agencies on board now that sexual assault kits need to go to the lab right away, processed, any identifiable profiles put into the CODIS system, and so that there's no delay in that part of the process. But there's a couple things that I want to touch on when you're talking about sexual assault cases, and I want to just touch on a couple of misconceptions. We've talked a lot about these cases have been tested, but now it's time for investigation. And there's a couple of things that I come across all of the time when I'm doing these cases, and there's this misconception that if DNA is found in a sexual assault kit, the case is solved. The case is over with.
Oh, God. Far from it. Yeah.
Right, far from it. But I often get, well, what more do you need? You have DNA.
Right.
And that is, of course, a huge piece of evidence or a huge part of the case.
It identifies somebody, but doesn't necessarily put you into a guilty verdict.
It can't tell us the circumstances of how it got there. Only the victim or survivor can tell us that.
Right.
And so that's why investigation, whether it happens on a campus or outside of the campus, I think what we're dealing with on a campus is not only the process not being there, the procedure not being consistent, but you have to take a look at the campus culture as well.
Sure.
So there's all of that. But that is a big misconception that we have to...
I can definitely tell that. One of the things that you hit, and we're going to have to leave it with this coming up, but I laugh, but you mentioned there is no right or wrong reaction. People that have been assaulted, some don't tell anybody. Some people scream. Some people immediately call the police. Some people fight back. Some people don't. So I ran into a case that I'm suing civilly on after he had this person had been convicted. And the attorney representing them said, well, doesn't the rape victim always yell? And, you know, everybody kind of said, really? So... Your job has to be very difficult in the deft touch. I wasn't even thinking about it, how you contact and the protocol you must go through. Suzette, as always, a great pleasure. We look forward to having you on, and maybe we'll talk to you next month, because I think there's going to be some things that come out on this homicide out in Ypsilanti. Great pleasure, as always. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. So, till next time, we'll be back with Behind the Bench.